you been looking for a podcast about agriculture? One that can increase your farm's profitability, all without putting you to sleep? Welcome to Field Trials Unleashed. We're experts in testing different farming practices and products. We test it and then report back the real skinny. This is Field Trials Unleashed. And here are your hosts, Craig Blohemker and Eric Beckett.
Welcome back to another episode of Field Trials Unleashed. I'm Craig.
And I'm Eric.
Eric, have you seen the extended forecast?
Yes, I have, and it's kind of dark and gloomy for planting.
A little bit cold.
A little chilly.
Well, let's talk about some planting considerations, because I know guys are chomping a bit. I already got text messages and phone calls that they think that we could be back in the field as early as tomorrow in some areas, so tempting to go out and plant. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, at very least, I think before we get too crazy, I think we need to allow some like recovery time since this last rain event and some of the cold temperatures. If at least we need to kind of dry out before we do any more planting.
Yes, I agree, Eric. As we think about corn, you know, I was reading an interesting article this morning from Bob Nielsen, and I didn't get through it all, so I apologize, but the main takeaway that I found was that corn needs 115 on average, 115 GDUs
yep.
to get out of the ground. Now, his emphasis was on ground temperature and not air temperature. So we need that. Those averages are probably going to be in that 61 to 62 degrees to get those amount of GDUs for, you know, 10 days
yeah.
is what we'd be looking at. So
yeah, definitely. And anything below 50 degrees isn't going to count.
So as we look at the extended forecast, it's cold. I really don't expect corn to come out of the ground too fast. I mean,
if at all. I mean, germination, you know, occurs at 50 degrees or thereabouts around that, a little below, depending on the cold germ of the seed. But yeah, we definitely, it's a consideration that you may not be planting in good conditions if we were to go out there and plant tomorrow.
So what do we do? Just tell guys not to plant?
Well, I mean, I think if it was my crop, you know, I mean, the yield potential, as soon as that seed is taken out of the bag, the yield potential drastically goes down, just like when you drive a new car off the car lot. The value of that car drastically decreases. Well, it's no different from seed. So, you know, if it was me, I'd want to protect that investment as best as possible. So, you know, while, you know, I realize most guys are probably going to want to do something in the field this week, I would consider maybe waiting until at least Wednesday so we've had some of that moisture leave the field. And maybe the temperatures to rebound a little bit. But as I look at the forecast, looks like, you know, we could be getting some more rain this weekend, depending on which forecast you look at. And then also Monday and Tuesday are supposed to be very cold, like at nighttime temperatures being in the low and mid to upper 30s. So that's going to really play havoc on soil temperatures and, you know, how much GDUs that seed is accumulating. So as I look forward, I think if I was going to do any planting this week, I would concentrate maybe efforts between Wednesday and Friday this week.
Well, as we think about corn going in the ground, if it's sitting there expending all this energy trying to get out of the ground and we don't have the temperatures to get it out of the ground, like you said, how much yield potential is lost just because that thing is struggling to get out of the soil. So I agree. It's painful to think about not getting out there planting, but some of these, you know, we might have to face the harsh reality of leaving that seed in the bag, like you mentioned. So you also think about cold, some of the things that we probably should have been doing as a priority last week. We didn't because we were trying to get everything else done and guys were wanting to get planting. Probably should have been thinking about some of the burn down opportunities we had with that warm weather. Now we're going into cold temperatures. Let's talk about some of the considerations we might have as we're trying to get those burn downs now.
Yeah, so if we think about some basic plant physiology, when plants have green tissue or newly, you know, leaves out there at this time of year, those plants are going to be shutting down at night, and really they're going to be shutting down at night, you know, when we start getting temperatures below 50 degrees and maybe even cold and definitely colder. But and then they also put on a heavy waxy cuticle, and so we're going to need to do everything we can to kind of beef up that spray solution. Now when I say beef up, we don't always necessarily need to add up our rates of actual product we're using, but you know, maybe change up some adjuvants we're using. So if we had normally had planned to use a crop oil concentrate, we might want to consider, you know, upgrading that to maybe a methylated seed oil, an MSO, which is typically, you know, as an industry standard, gives you a much hotter burn, so to speak.
So Eric, if we're doing burn down ahead of corn, obviously standard reason, we'd probably just go ahead and throw in some 32 because we're making the pass anyway. And but you know, on soybeans, recommending throwing in some kind of nitrogen source there as far as, you know, burn downs go.
Yeah, so definitely we're still going to want to follow the labels, if especially with like glyphosate. The glyphosate is still going to need an AMS source, and then if we're facing challenging conditions, I would use the maximum rate of AMS that's required on the label, just to help overcome any barriers. That AMS is going to help break down any calcium deposits that may be in that waxy cuticle, that heavy waxy cuticle that developed. The nitrogen in the AMS is really going to help penetrate that. So that's going to be key. And then using these, you know, these different oil-based adjuvants, that's going to really help spread out the spray solution over the leaf and, you know, make sure we get good coverage. And then along with, you know, since I said good coverage, we may also may want to consider upping our rates. So whether it is corn or beans, you know, I would say 18 to 20 gallons the acre should be the standard. And then if we really get in adverse, you know, maybe 25 gallons per acre if, you know, if we're not doing some high rate UAN applications. And, you know, if we are using UAN as the carrier and we need to get to higher volume rates, but we don't want to use extra UAN, we can definitely add more water to that spray solution to get our, you know, to get our overall gallons per acre use rate up.
So Eric, as we think about burn downs, I'm going to have to go there because somebody needs to talk about this. We have a lot of different trait platforms out there this year on soybeans, specifically is what I'm talking about. And what I mean, we have Enlist, and then we got Extend Flex, which offers us the, you know, either way you look at it, we got Liberty and 2,4-D or Liberty and dicamba. So it's tempting to go out there and put these burn downs ahead of the crop because they are tolerant.
Yep.
Now, I think we need to discuss the label, because if you're using Enlist beans, yes, you can go in there and you can put 2,4-D ahead of the crop, and you can use a generic for $2.50, $3. By label, you still have to wait the time period, and I believe that is 7 to 10 days. That's by label. Now, on dicamba, it's a whole different story. So you could go in there with Banville, Clarity, your flavor.
Yep.
If it's not Extendamax, you were supposed to, by label, wait, I think, 30 days.
Yeah, I can't really think of too many growers that are probably going to do that, but it is worth noting that, you know, the label is the law, and we need to do everything we can to follow the label exactly. Because if there's any complaints that are brought to us that, you know, for misapplication, I mean, that's going to be the first thing you're going to look at is what chemical was applied, and then did you apply that chemical, you know, within the restraints of the label? And if you're not, then it's going to be an easy slap of the fine to you or to us, whoever might be applying it.
Well, I think that's the general point. If we have issues, that's when this is all going to come into play. So again, tempting, just be cognizant of the label, what it says, and keep that in mind when you go out and make these applications and then planting behind it.
Everything that we do moving forward, we're just going to continue to be under the microscope. So we just got to be good stewards.
Well, with all this technology, record keeping is very easy.
And the way everything gets mapped out these days.
Yeah. So there's really these companies that come after you, like, you know, I don't, USDA or
Illinois Department of Ag or EPA, you know, name your agency of choice, and I'm sure they've got some type of jurisdiction over you.
Yeah, but they're going to ask for these records. I mean, everybody, I think, has had issues at some point with the dicamba, and the Illinois Department of Ag coming in here and doing their due diligence to research and figure it out. So they ask for those spray records. They want to know when the wind speeds were, which direction.
You know, we kind of talked about burn downs and everything. What do you think we get our guest speaker on today?
I think we're going to get Tom Hogan on next. And, you know, talking beyond the scope of burn down, we want to talk about Liberty applications, because I suspect there's going to be a pretty heavy usage of Liberty. So I want to get Tom Hogan on. He's a representative for Precision Laboratories, and kind of get his best practices for a successful Liberty application.
Yeah, and we just want to make sure we're educating everybody of why we might be asking a grower to maybe spend a little bit more money on these adjuvants.
Tom is very knowledgeable, and I love his energy. He's such a great, charismatic guy, but he does emphasize the importance of these adjuvants. And I've always said, if you're going to go out there and spend, you know, $50 in chemicals on a pass, why would you skimp on the adjuvants to make that chemical work the best that it possibly can?
Yep. And just remember that adjuvants, they're also, you know, not only are they going to help increase efficacy of the chemical. They're also going to keep some of these chemicals around longer because we're going to have less of a chance of weed resistance developing. So anything we can help that chemical perform, the longer that chemical is being around, longer for us to use.
Hey, Tom, welcome to Field Trials Unleashed podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Tom, take a second and introduce yourself. Tell them a little bit about your background and just your career. I think you've got a wealth of knowledge and expertise, at least every time I've called you.
Well, I appreciate that. I've been in the industry for about 40 years now. Started out with Monsanto, been with a couple of basic manufacturers, been on the distribution side as well as the retail side of the business. And for the last 16 years, I've been working with Precision Laboratories as a district sales manager and cover Wisconsin and Northern Illinois for my territory and have the opportunity to work with you guys. So it's a really good deal.
You got quite a bit of traveling then.
Yeah. Yeah, we get a few road miles, somewhat less with the COVID situation, but it's a lot of territory, you know, ranging from corn and soybeans down here all the way up to potatoes and cranberries up in Wisconsin. So it's interesting.
Oh, potatoes!
I always thought
that would be fun to try and grow potatoes. I didn't have much experience with that, but when I was with Bayer as an intern, they're on the research farm. They would grow potatoes every year for kicks and grins.
Yeah, it's an interesting part of the world, and of course, Wisconsin is a pretty little state to travel through, so I enjoy it all.
Yeah. Well, Tom, I think this year it's going to be an interesting year because obviously we have the Xtend Flex soybeans, and that offers us the chance to use Liberty, and I'm kind of straying away from the dicamba just because of the issues we've had and just all the paperwork and logistics of just getting dicamba applied. So I'm planning on using Liberty on a lot of my acres anyway. But with that in mind, tell us some best practices, you know, to go along with our Liberty applications.
Okay, well, that's a good question. I think, as you say, Liberty is going to get on a lot of acres this next year. And what we want to do is do everything we possibly can to give your end user, the grower, the opportunity to get the best results out of that application. And to do that, we have to do a couple different things. One is to get good coverage. And another thing is to make sure the product that gets from the application rig through the air onto the surface and into the plant. And you just happen to carry a product called FS Max Supreme that happens to probably be the best product out there for this application because it offers you true AMS, liquid AMS, and then you also have guar. And guar is a gum type of polymer. It's an organic type of a product and works extremely well in offering you the opportunity to get large droplets to the plant so that they don't evaporate and do a nice job on these applications. And that would kind of, when you're talking about, you know, a systemic type of a product with dicambas and 2,4-Ds, that's fine to have big droplets. But when you're talking about something that's more on the contact side of things, such as a Liberty, you want to have smaller droplets. And so we've actually kind of modified our recommendation in these applications. And we want to make sure we've got plenty of AMS in there, so we want to follow the guidelines of your manufacturer. So what we're looking at is about 32 ounces of your FS Max Supreme onto this acre, and then make up the balance of the AMS to get the proper rate to whatever your specific rep wants you to be applying on that acre. As I said, guar tends to make bigger droplets, but in our applications, we've found that in applying Liberty, you're applying a lot of gallons. You're going 20, 25 gallons. You're running higher pressures, and you're actually generally the suggested opportunity for your nozzles is to be like a turbo T or a twin turbo T is even better. In doing that, you're not going to get big droplets. You're going to get uniform sized droplets. They're going to give you nice coverage. And the benefit of the guar inherently is that you get the ability to limit the evaporation in the air so the product goes from the nozzle all the way to the target. Once it hits that target, it doesn't splash, doesn't run off. It actually sits on there, has a nice long dwell time. That droplet actually sits there for a longer period of time than if it wasn't in that application and gives you the best opportunity to get uptake of that product and get the results you're looking for to get the greater efficacy.
So, Tom, you mentioned that the products are using guar as a spray modifier, but I've heard some recent stuff or some recent claims that, of some of these breakdowns of some of these spray modifiers within the pump, specifically like pump shear. How is FF's Max Supreme unique in that way?
a great question. Yeah, you've got a number of different types of polymers. You've got man-made polymers, the polyacrylamide type of products. They generally have the ability to make larger droplets. The fact is, though, that unlike a guar gum, which is an organic product, like I said, it doesn't have the ability to go through the pump time and time again, and the polyacrylamide will actually it'll break off or shorten those strings, and therefore have less ability to give you larger droplets, more uniform sized droplets. So pump shear is the term that they use, can really impact and hurt the applications in these cases, where the guar is not impacted by that and consistently gives you great results in your applications.
Yeah. Now, Tom, we've talked about some of the AMS and the guar aspects. What are some of the other unique aspects or things you might want to consider besides upping your gallons per acre for contact or for coverage? And then an AMS, what are some other things you might want to include in that tank to get the most out of, or the benefits that already might be built into some of our unique adjuvants?
Well, that's one of the neat things about guar also is that not only does it give you the ability to keep that droplet intact onto the surface and into the plant, but it also, because of the nature of guar itself, it offers built-in surfactancy. So you have a limited need to add additional surfactants to applications with guar. And that's a wonderful thing, because if you can get that droplet to spread across that leaf surface, giving you more, again, this is the details with bigger droplets, is if you can get them spread across more of the surface, you make up for that teeny tiny little droplet that would cover lots of different spots. And so the built-in surfactancy of the guar gives you the ability to get more uptake into that plant by lowering surface tension, spreading that droplet on the leaf, and then getting greater exposure to leaf surface and uptake.
Tom, what are your thoughts on spraying environment? We've, you know, adding in these adjuvants, upping the rates, you know, making sure droplet sizes, having the right nozzles. What do you think about spraying environments, though? I mean, do we go out any point in time of the day, or what kind of conditions are you looking for?
I tend to do my best to leave that to the basic manufacturer rep that is representing those products. But there's no doubt about it. The time of day definitely makes a big difference in these applications. I'm hearing things about people not spraying early in the morning and not spraying it later in the evening, trying to make sure that the growing conditions are good, trying to make sure that the evaporation situation is low as possible, humidity, keep an eye on all those factors. Make sure that that plant is actively growing, and that the weather conditions are such that you give yourself the best chance to get good coverage and get good results from your Liberty.
Hey, while we're talking to you, let's go ahead and pick your brain just a little bit on, because we've also got some adjuvants as far as dicamba goes as well. So what kind of best practices for dicamba this year? Has anything changed from last year?
Well, yeah, and obviously the addition of additional vapor grip is a requirement by the government this year. And you have FS Descension, which is a wonderful product to give you more of a protection against the vaporization of the product and getting up and moving in the field. And so you need to add that to every acre that you're applying with your dicamba bean applications, and make sure that you're getting good coverage. I like, you know, FS Intention Advanced. Again, gives you the guar, all those abilities that the guar can offer, and it gives you a patented type of a water conditioner so that you're not impacting the volatility of that product, but it's still giving you the ability for those products to not be impacted by hard water and different minerals that might be on the leaf surface itself.
So then is with this new product that for the volatilization and for the, is there a need for an additional water conditioner with this new product?
You're going to need to have the drift agent in there, water conditioner, and then you're going to want to have the vapor grip, the Descension, FS Descension in that tank all together. All three of those components do separate different things, and they all are important to have in that tank with those spray solutions.
Definitely important not to skimp on anything, is it?
Well, with the added Descension, you're required to do that. So if we're going to pick and choose that application, it's got to be in there. you have the choice of adding a guar, a kind of a drip type of retention type of product. You have the ability to pick and choose whether you use a water conditioner. But I think it's pretty much industry-wide, it's been accepted that both of those things really give you the best results and keep you safer for the environment. Nobody wants to be, you know, have their product bothering their neighbors. And so let's do it right and make sure that we get the best results out of the products and least impact on some off-target situations.
Now, Tom, kind of while we're on kind of the dicamba topic, now all these best practice managements, I know has been kind of targeted around the soybean acre, specifically the dicamba soybean acre. Would these same management strategies apply to in corn if we were applying dicamba in corn?
Well, in common sense would say that, that should be the way we treat these things, is that we would do all the same things in the dicamba applications in the corn that we're doing in the beans. That doesn't seem to be the case at this point in time, and I'm not trying to be a proponent one way or the other, but I do like the idea. If it's a safe, you know, application, a good application in the soybeans, I think that there's merit to just adapting and adopting those products to these applications so that you get yourself, you know, a safe, effective application. And that's what we're striving for, is not to cause problems. You know, it gives the industry a black eye when we have problems and people report these incidents. So we want to do everything we possibly can to get the best results and not impact our neighbors and then not get our industry in trouble too.
Yeah, definitely. I like those recommendations a lot.
Well, Tom, is there any?
I appreciate the time.
Tom, is there any other products coming to market or that you got in the pipeline that we need to consider or look at?
Well, I think, you know, obviously the addition of the vapor grip type product with the FS Dissension was kind of surprised us. It came out pretty late and they did not give us any flexibility in these applications. We've got the one product and that's what we're using. We've got a given rate. It's pretty much cut and dried from that standpoint. What I do expect to see is in the future, next year, is a combination of a product like an Attention Advanced application with the Dissension built right into it. So it's a one easy to use type of a product. And that'll, you know, make it a lot easier to apply. It'll make it probably, you know, more competitively priced and give you an opportunity to really take the application to another level.
Yeah, definitely. If nothing else, just saving some room in our chemical sheds.
Making our mix guy happy too.
Exactly right. And, you know, not to throw stones at any mix guys, but, you know, they are human and we're working long hours in the spring. So if we can put one product into that vat rather than putting in three, you know, different products, that's just less opportunity for error, you know. And so I'm all for that. You know, we've got separate AMSs. We can put dry AMS in. We can put liquid AMS in. We can add the different drift and retention agents and the volatility products. But every time you take another step into this, just opens you up to just more problems and more challenges that we can actually end up with a little bit more of a problem.
Absolutely. Well, Tom, we appreciate your time and look forward to seeing you again here later this season.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you guys. You guys be safe this spring. We work some crazy long hours in the spring in this industry. And so everybody just, we try to do everything that's right and do it safely. And look forward to talking to you again.
Yep. Right. Take care.
Yep. See you. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, guys. Bye now.
So there you have it. That was best management practices for Liberty applications and dicamba applications this year,
along with some up-to-date planting recommendations for planting in the cold, wet conditions.
And don't forget about the burn downs, Eric. Please continue to follow the podcast Field Trials Unleashed. We're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all your major platforms. We're on them. Give us a follow. Leave some commentary. We'd love to hear what people are thinking about the show.
You've been listening to Field Trials Unleashed. Agronomic trials, products, practices, what makes sense for you and your farm's profitability. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we hope you've gotten some useful and practical information. Make sure to like, rate, and review, and we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, follow Craig and Eric on Twitter at Trials Unleashed. From there, you can get agronomic updates and submit questions for future shows. See you next time.